Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kunstman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges, nurture their little ones' development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am just so excited to be here with my friend, Susie Allison, creator of Busy Toddler. Welcome, Susie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, welcome back. I'm so excited for you to be here with us. And before we dive into talking about taming toy chaos and all the excitement around play and toys, there might be some people who aren't familiar with you and your work. So could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I'm Susie. I run Busy Toddler, which is a big Instagram account. We're actually almost at 2 million. We'll probably be right about 2 million when this airs, which is pretty cool. I started my Instagram account back in 2015 when I was drowning in motherhood with two kids under two. And I wondered if other people on the internet could use some help in these busy, chaotic years. And it turns out they could. I have a bachelor's degree in elementary education and I have a master's in early childhood education. So I have literally made my entire life based around children, educating children, and supporting their development.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Right. Like everyone could use a little extra support out there. And
absolutely.
Yeah, the work you're doing is so needed and so fun at the same time. So
thank you.
I'd love to just start us off with this question that I like to ask everyone. What do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and often misunderstood developmental period?
My word for this is expectation. And I think when we get into toddlerhood, our expectations shift. We went from having this baby that was very dependent on us. And we really know and we have a very clear picture of what a baby needs and what to expect of a baby. And then when that thing starts walking and talking, having needs and having opinions and using their voice and their force and their life, then our expectations start to shift. And we either can see them as expecting too much emotionally or not expecting enough of them physically or thinking that and expecting them to be more academically developed than they should be naturally. These kind of expectations, we end up running into a wall with them and they can kind of crumble around us and create a weight in toddlerhood when really if we can release the expectations or at least shift the expectations and to make them a little more developmentally appropriate and research sound and based and things like that, we can have a much smoother, a much simpler, and a much more enjoyable toddlerhood phase. But it's all about those expectations.
Yeah, it's so true. And if you go out there and look at some of the surveys and research out there, there's a very large expectation gap in the toddler years, and that, you know, a majority of parents, like for some surveys, say that a majority of some parents of 2-year-olds feel that their child should be able to control their emotions and stop having a tantrum when they're having one. And so it's just, and then knowing that developmentally tantrums are a typical part of development and that tantrums are going to happen in toddlerhood. And it's because toddlers cannot control their emotions and in turn their behavior, and they've got to offload that. It's just amazing how expectations can really make or break our experience, regardless of any of the doing, any of the parenting tools, skills that we have as parents and caregivers or a child's behavior.
Yeah, it's 100%. The way that we expect the child to be and then whether or not that child meets that expectation or exceeds it then ends up determining how we feel about them. And that really shouldn't be the case. We should be able to just enjoy the child in the present moment as the child is. And, you know, wrap our arms around that whole child rather than feeling like, well, I expected it to look this way, or I expected it to feel this way, or I expected them to be doing this at this time. If we can really erase a lot of those expectations and just come in it with the expectation that we're going to love, honor, and respect this child, I think that that's such a better way to view toddlerhood and just to give those kids exactly what they need. And what they need is us. And they need, a lot of the times, it's just the expectations to be lowered.
Yeah, exactly. And then whenever we're not so upset about them not meeting our expectations, we can start meeting them where they're at and, you know, start creating shifts from there, which is basically what all of this conference, the whole conference is about and what we do at Transforming Toddlerhood and everything. And
we're literally transforming expectations. Done. I rewrote your tagline. We're done.
There it is.
You're so welcome.
I love it. Today, what we're really focusing on in this session is toys, because we know, gosh, around the toddler years, we can start feeling overwhelmed by toys. We have, you know, babies like first Christmas, second Christmas, first birthday party, second birthday party, all the things, plus all the like the cute toys, all the toys that are marketed to us for development and this, that, and the other. And all of a sudden we are buried in toys.
Yes. It becomes this giant amount of stress and clutter in our lives that we didn't anticipate. I always feel like toys is the one that surprises parents so much, where you know, you start out in the baby years and then something just changes in that toddler years and suddenly toys become a bigger deal in your life than you ever expected them to be. So I'm so excited to help with that today and to lend my ideas and wisdom. A lot of what I pull from started in my foundation with toys started with how I watched and observed 5, 6, and 7 year olds play with toys during my span as a teacher. Toys were a huge part of my classroom. And then from there, watching my own kids, and then my house becomes kind of the center of our neighborhood. And so getting to watch about 15 kids grow up over the last decade, and again, seeing the way that tools are used, it's just given me such an interesting and different perspective than I think a lot of people have on toys. And I'm so excited to share that as much as I can today.
I love it. Well, you brought up this great point of like tools. So what does it mean that toys are tools, and are all of these toys / tools necessary?
Yeah. So I always go back to that quote from Jean Piaget, where he says, play is the work of childhood. And I always expand it out to, and toys are the tools for that play. If we really do believe that play is the work of childhood, which it is, we have to have some tools to get that work and get that job done. Oftentimes we view toys for kids as stuff they own, things to give them, something to show our love, make them happy, make them smile. If we can shift from that mindset on toys and instead look at toys as this is this really important and significant tool that this child needs for their massive amount of play that they need to do throughout the span of their childhood, that creates such a different shift in the way that we view toys and how we even see them in our home, how we bring them in our home. So for me, the whole goal is to help parents shift that understanding of toys, to stop seeing toys as just gifts and stuff for kids to own, and to really see it the same way you would see a tool in your garage or a tool you're going to use to cook, and to really look at this toy critically, thoughtfully, and to see it again more as a tool and less as just a thing.
I love that. And, you know, absolutely, when we think of it just as like stuff, things to give, and switch that mindset to a tool, I mean, it just has toys bring on like a whole new light. They like, oh, it's a tool. What does this tool do? What can this tool create? And can you talk a little bit more about like how we might view toys from that new lens?
So I think what I would challenge you to look at is, as you're bringing toys into the house, exactly what you just said, run your head through that narrative. How are they going to use this toy? How is this toy going to support them? Where's this toy going to live in our house? Will other children that come into our house or currently live in our house be able to utilize that toy? Space is really valuable in a house. And when we bring in a toy, it's really important to look at that toy more globally than to look at it as maybe just for one child or one single use. How long can we get that toy to fit with that child and to be a tool for them? I often look at toys the same way I would look at an appliance or something in my kitchen. And I'm really thoughtful about my drawer space and how much room I have to bring things into the kitchen. How long is this going to last us? Do I really need this? You know, I don't, my mother-in-law cooks stir fry all the time. I don't. So do I really need a wok? Maybe no for me, for my cooking. I don't think I need that. And it would take up a lot of space if I brought that into my kitchen and put that into a cabinet. And that's a similar analogy to toys. When we look at a toy and we consider it as a tool, how often will the child use this tool? Who's going to use this tool? Is this tool going to take up a lot of space in their area? Will they be able to work with this tool? Is it going to help their development? If we can really shift from it being like, oh, well, it's really cool right now and they might really like it and it's going to get them to stop crying at Target, and I just want to show them my love for them, and I just want to make sure they have something cute right now. If we can look at toys a little more globally, a little more long-term, and look at it in a scope of how will it actually be utilized in the home, that's going to change a lot of the way that you look at those toys on a toy shelf and and how you see toys as whether or not you actually need to buy that for your child at that exact time.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And when we think about like, okay, so when we start feeling, gosh, I'm just thinking like myself, like when we start feeling like overrun by toys and the chaos of toys, I mean, it can impact us adults. How do you think it also just impacts like the child and play?
It impacts kids in a way that I think we don't consider often. We talk all the time as parents about, oh, the toy room is overwhelming. I'm so overwhelmed by the toy rut. I can't, this visual clutter on all of their toys, it's making my brain spin. And we don't shift ourselves to think, I wonder if my child is thinking the same thing. And the truth is, they probably are. It's just manifesting itself in a way that's a little different than us posting online saying, the toy room is driving me bananas. What you might see from your child if they're overwhelmed by toys is they might have a hard time picking a toy to play with. They might not sustain their focus on a toy for very long. They might be coming to you for help saying things like, I'm bored, I don't know what to play with. And you're standing there looking at this room full of beautiful toys going, how do you not know what to play with? But the truth is that that's their body telling you, I'm overwhelmed. I just don't know how to say that or process that, but I'm really overwhelmed by the amount of stuff I'm seeing. If we honestly go back to that kitchen analogy, and I'm going to overuse this so much today, but it helps to just visualize this as a parent. When I walk into the kitchen and I need to cook, and the counters are covered, the drawers are stuffed, the dishwasher needs to be unloaded, the sink is full, I lose instantly all motivation to ever want to cook in that kitchen again. And that is exactly how kids feel when they walk into a playroom or a toy room or their bedroom, whatever space it is for toys, and that space is chaos and cluttered, and it's just full of stuff. They can't see where to play or what to play with the same way that you lose the motivation to cook. They lose the motivation to play. And when they lose the motivation to play, they lose those chances for learning. We've lost those moments of peace for independent play. And now we've just like completely spiraled out of control. And it all goes back to the toys and the amount of toys and how the toys are presented. So it's hard, but it's just a shift we have to start making, is seeing these toys so much differently and honoring the fact that the amount of toys for a child is going to vary kid to kid. But it can be overwhelming, and it can seriously and significantly impact their ability to find play, which becomes really huge at this stage.
Yeah. Yes. And especially whenever we want to support toddlers in starting to create some moments of independent play and things like that. And if they don't know where to play or they're overwhelmed by the options, then that can actually hinder the development of that.
Yeah, it sure can.
Yeah. So how can we help toddlers find the right tools for play?
So for me, with toddlerhood, they're just starting out on play. We're just learning who this child is. We don't necessarily know what kind of toys or things, interests, hobbies that child is going to have, what's going to make them tick, and what they're going to gravitate towards. So I like to ask parents to just make sure you have at least one toy from each of these five categories. And I actually have them written down so I won't forget, because I'll get lost. So what's really important in these toddler years is that we just expose them to a variety of different toys. That doesn't mean a ton of toys. It's just a variety of different toy categories. And then from there, you can watch what your child has gravitated towards more. Then you know what to buy more of or what kind of toys are going to make them tick and make them click. And then you're not wasting your money on toys. You're not overstuffing the room, and you're putting in toys that are really actually going to help the child develop and be the kind of play that that child is into. So here are the categories of toys that I really strongly suggest you have at least one of each as you start to build your toy room. A toy for caregiving. This could be an animal toy or a doll. Something that the child can practice those empathy and caregiving skills with is so unbelievably important. And of course, toys are gender neutral. So it can be a doll for any child. It can be animals for any child, stuffed animals, small animals, whatever kind of toy, but have something for the child to practice their doctoring skills or nursing skills, the vet skills, the parenting skills, the teaching skills. All these kind of empathy and caregiving skills need to be practiced. You need something that they can practice that on. Have a few toys for dramatic play or imaginary play. This might be some dress-up costumes. It might be magic wands. It could be a certain kind of set of cups that they can create and imagine with. But you want a few toys that can really hone in on that imaginary play and dramatic play so that they have that opportunity to grow that side of their brain, which is a hugely important side. have at least one toy for social scenes and social settings. So that could be a dollhouse, that could be a station, it could be a kitchen, but you want some place for the child to start practicing the social scenes that they're seeing out in the world and start applying and practicing those in the home setting. Have some toys that for building. Make sure you have a good set of wooden blocks or connecting blocks, magnetic tiles, marble runs. These are all great toys that really speak to that building side of play. And then the last one is a movement toy. And again, these are gender neutral toys. So every child needs to be exposed to toys that move. That could be a ball, could be a ramp, could be a car or a truck, something that moves that they can practice those science skills with, those cause and effect, the STEM, be driving around, all that good, glorious stuff. So caregiving, dramatic play, social settings, something for building and something for moving. If you can start with those five, even just one from each category, and then you get to play this really cool role of being an observer and a researcher, and you start collecting data on your child. And I love doing this with my kids. This is one of the best parts in early parenting, was watching my kids play and be like, so what makes you tick? What are you interested in? And really following and seeing what each child is interested in. And it was fascinating for me as I got to unlock and notice what each child was really gravitating towards and be like, okay, you really gravitate towards toys that build. And even if you don't have a toy that builds, you find a way to build with it. So I'm going to ask for Christmas and ask for birthdays. And if grandma's asking for a new toy to buy you, I'm going to shovel it into this kind of building category. And then for my daughter, it was all about animals and all about kind of small social scene stories. So really shoving all into that side. And it's really cool when you can really tailor toys to a child, you get more play from that child, as opposed to just saying, well, this is the coolest toy on the market, or I saw this on the shelf, or this toy catalog says I need this, or this toy company advertised to me on Instagram. If instead you can really look at the child and say, well, these were the five categories of toys, and I noticed that they really gravitate towards these, or we don't have enough of this one, that gives you a better blueprint as opposed to just going out and buying everything and hoping something sticks.
Yeah, this is such a great way to go about it. It's like really an organized approach that just, yeah, allows us to start to go in and, as you said, gather data. So then you're like, you know where to expand instead of just, you know,
saying
being
whatever,
really random and then having a bunch of stuff that your child just never even touches.
Yeah. And that happens, you know, to me too. If I don't read the data right on my own kids, and I'm not writing this down, it's just stuff in my head. But if I'm not thinking about them the right way, and I just say, oh, I think you might like this toy and pull it, I'm usually wrong. I have to stay and honor within how they play. And that's the same way for adults. If I'm really in to, you know, photography, and then you come over and hand me weightlifting equipment and say, well, I think you'd be really interested in this and you should try it, I'm in no way interested in that. And I don't want that as my hobby. And that's kind of the same way with kids and toys. If we just start bringing in random things and go, well, I think you would like this and I want you to try this, or you should expand into this hobby, that's the same thing as, you would never do that to an adult. You'd never come up to an adult that knits and be like, I know you like this, but I really think skiing is more for you, so you should go over and try skiing. Like, we would never do that. We honor and we love what our friends are into, and we love what other adults are into. So do the same with kids. Once you figure out what they're into, run with it. Really, really run with it.
I love it. And so how can we kind of create a space then? Like, you know, we understand a little bit more about the toys, and how can we create a space that really promotes play and allows kids to, you know, explore and do that work?
For this, the word is accessibility. The toys have to be accessible. If you can't see the toy, if the child can't see the toy, reach the toy on their own and manipulate the toy on their own, they're either not going to play with it, they won't remember it's there, or they're going to keep coming up to you for help with that toy. And we want to minimize that as much as possible, because we want kids to be in charge of their play. We want kids owning their play, and we want kids playing as much as possible independent of adult help. So when you're thinking and setting up these spaces for kids, look at it from their eye level. If you can't see that toy, they won't remember it. Kids are very out of sight, out of mind, as we all are. If I can't see something in the refrigerator, I forget it's there. I don't cook with it. It goes bad. And then we're done. And that's the same way with kids and toys. They might forget this toy ever existed and then developmentally outgrow that toy before they've ever had a chance to play with it. And it was all because it was pushed too far back on a shelf, or it was buried at the bottom of a toy box. They may have loved that toy, then they never got the chance to see it. So they never got the chance to use it. And then that's just kind of wasted money, which a lot of the toy issue becomes it's just expensive. So we want to maximize what we have and make sure that what we buy and what we bring in, they're using. So look for clear bins, look for boxes that they can see inside of. If it's like a woven box and they can see inside of it, that's going to be better than like a canvas box. Take toys out of the packaging that they came in and put them into a more accessible basket or container that the child can look into and see and reach. Really get down on their level and really consider, can they see it from here? I can see it because I'm looking down into it, but can they see it from their level when they go up to this toy shelf? Can they realize that there's toys stacked three deep? They might not be able to. I strongly encourage ditching just a generic toy basket or box, because once that lid goes down, those toys are closed up and kids can't see them, which means they're not going to remember to play with them. And it's also always going to be easier to put away toys when a child has little bins and boxes and places to put them. It doesn't need to be rainbow colored. It doesn't need to be so house beautiful like we see on Instagram. We're just talking about very basic containers and very basic places to put the toys. But what becomes so important is just that the child can see it, the child can reach it, and the child knows how to put it back at the end, because then that helps everybody to find play for the next day.
That is so true. And I just remember like thinking back to, you know, when I was little and I remember the toy box I had, and I just have distinct memories of like opening the toy box and like literally digging through it. Like it's like toy soup in there. And I remember like digging through, like going like this and like getting frustrated, then like throwing toys out and all the things. And I'm like, yeah, like when it's toy soup, it's just another barrier.
It's another barrier
to play.
Yes. And we want to eliminate as many barriers to play as possible. When kids get overwhelmed by clutter, they don't play. When kids can't find a toy, they don't play. When kids don't know what toys are available, or they start to grab a toy and then realize they're missing half the parts for it, they don't play. Our job with toys, like you just said so beautifully, is we just have to remove these barriers. We have to remove the barriers so the kids can get to their tools, so they can do the hard work of play that their bodies desperately need to be doing. Desperately.
Yeah. And do you think there's a specific number of toys like kids should have? Like this question comes up a lot. I'm just curious.
It comes up a lot for me too. And I don't. I think it is so personal to the child and to the family, to the space that they're in, whether you have a basement or you're in a 2-bedroom apartment or you have a playroom or all the toys are in the children's bedrooms, they share a room. These are all going to change how many toys you have, how many toys you bring in. It's also going to depend kid to kid. One of my kids gets very overwhelmed by toy clutter and needs as minimalist approach as possible. So his room has a lot less toys than, say, my daughter's room, who she loves options for toys and she loves moving toys in to play with each other. So if you came into our house and looked at it from the onset, you might say like, oh my gosh, do they not buy toys for that kid? And that's not the case. We do. They just get put in different places because we understood pretty quickly that it was hard for him to make decisions on toys and what to play with. So he can only have a limited number out, and this is fine for him. And this works really well for him. Whereas my daughter can have an absolute plethora of options. And you could walk into her and be like, this kid has too many toys, but she doesn't. She has the right number for her. And so as hard as it is to say to a family, no, there isn't a right number and you're just going to have to figure it out for yourself. That is the truth. But again, you put on that hat of data and you put on that hat as a researcher and you say, is the number of toys working for my kids? Do they have the right number of toys to play with? Are they overwhelmed with opportunities to play? Or on the opposite side, are they looking for a toy and trying to make something work? And maybe I could add in another tool, just the same way that when my husband's doing his building projects in the garage, every now and then he has to say, you know what, the tools I have aren't working. And I'm trying to, you know, go around, you know, and cut corners, but I really just need this other tool. Then we bring in another toy and we bring in another tool and we support that play the way that we can. But again, unfortunately, there is no hard and fast rule. It's just whatever is best for your family, your child, the number of kids you have, the space you have, and what makes your kids tick. And it might be a lot to one family and it might be too few to another, but you have to find the path that is the best for your family, especially in this situation.
And this is so important because this is almost in every situation. And I think whenever we can direct parents and caregivers back to their own family and what fits for their unique child and their unique family, it is so empowering because we don't have to worry about what someone's doing on Instagram or what the neighbor is doing or what, you know, the parent from preschool or something like that. We don't have to worry about what they're doing because it's about what our family needs. And I just think that is incredibly empowering when we are able to turn back inward instead of constantly turning outward for understanding what's necessary.
Parenting is such a unique situation. And for hundreds of years, it was a really unique approach. And it was whatever works well for your family is what works well because no one else could see your family. And no one else could tell your family what to do. It was a gut decision based on the parent or parents to decide what was best for the children. And not to go too high level here, but when we switched into the social media phase of parenting, then there suddenly became what might look like the one right approach, or this is the best approach. And there's never a best approach. A fully best approach, because every family is different and every family needs to find what's going to work for their family. We can give suggestions, you and me on our Instagram accounts. We can give suggestions. We can give thoughts. We can give ideas that have worked for other families, but we can never fully say this is absolutely going to work for your family because it's worked for every family.
Absolutely.
Not true. And so I think one of the biggest things to remind parents of, especially in the toddler years, as you're looking more outward, is to look outward, gather ideas, but always measure those ideas against your family. Just the same way you would with dinner at night. You know your kid is not going to eat that, so you're not going to cook it. But with parenting, we often say, well, their family liked to eat it. Their family liked to parent with this, so I'm going to apply it to our family, and I'm going to really hammer it in until it works for our family. And it might never, the same way that that meal or that dinner might never work for my family. And I'm not going to cook that for them. It's not going to work. So everything that we say and everything that we put out there, everything I've said today, and I know that Devin will agree, you need to put it against that lens of your family and take that advice. Be so grateful that we have this opportunity to share parenting with so many other parents. We're so blessed in this age, as much as we trash on social media, we're so blessed to be able to see the commonalities in parenting. But we also need to remember within those commonalities, every single family is unique and playing with incredibly different variables. And so while you can look at that advice and take in that advice, then you need to sift it through your family and through your own lens. And I always say the best part is you can come away and say, yes, this is going to work great for my family, or I could pull pieces of this and make it work. Or honestly, what is great for me sometimes is going, absolutely not. I would never do it like that. And at least I've identified the way that it will never work for my kids. And that sometimes is, there's beauty in that, to look at someone's parenting and go, no, that would never work for us. But at least I know what the opposite side is. And that's going to help me form my own unique story. So always a grain of salt.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. And I love all your analogies. You have all the great analogies. This is so.
I love analogies. This is me.
I love it. Thinking about, so we've talked a lot about, toys as tools, how to look at what tools to put in a space, how to kind of set up the space, how to also look at our unique families and setting up spaces and learning what we need. Now, what about the toy influx parts of the year? Christmas, birthdays, even other holidays, sometimes Easter, things like that. The toys can come flooding in. So how can parents prepare for that influx? And also, how can parents kind of handle well-meaning friends and family who may be contributing to an influx that parents don't necessarily want?
Oh, I hear this so much. So first of all, in preparing for the influx, always going to want to do a major purge. You're always going to want to do a purge before your family's main holidays, your family's birthdays. Take that time a couple weeks before. And I always say a couple weeks before because it's nice to let the dust settle. And as you've purged the toys and gone through and figured out, gotten rid of the small toys, the broken toys, the toys they're too old for, the toys that nobody's playing with and hasn't played with maybe ever, as you're, or the broken ones, as you're removing those toys, and you reset everything, then you get a clearer picture of where are the needs, because you've now spent a little bit of time with the toys and you're not going to do this all at once. You're going to go in stages. No one needs mid-project regret syndrome. Just go through little by little and weed out the toys. Get rid of the excess, cleanse it, purge it, get ready and reset. And that will give you this chance to look and say, what are our needs coming into this holiday, this birthday, this season? What could I tell people we're interested in? As far as talking to those people, especially the ones that we're closest to, the aunties, the uncles, the grandparents, having a really frank conversation is really important. And this doesn't have to be a mean conversation. You're not targeting them. You're not saying, you know, you overlove my child. Like, you know, how lucky are we that we have, you know, might have grandparents or aunties that are raining toys down on our children? Like, how lucky? What a lucky problem to have. But it can be an overwhelming problem and it can really impact the child's play and how the house is functioning. So it's okay to speak up. And the way I always tell people to come at it is from a spot of sincere love and gratitude. Thank you so much for showering my child with all these toys. We have hit a point where there are so many toys in the house that we can't handle all the extra toys. And the toys that are being bought aren't being played with. And toys are expensive. And I want to make sure that what you're spending your hard-earned money on is getting used with the kids. And that's really where I always push it towards is it becomes a monetary thing. Toys are really expensive. And so then to see some $50 toy sit in the corner never used, I feel really guilty about that because that was a gift from them. It was their hard-earned money that they and then their time that they took to pick that out for the child, and then here it sits unused. I don't want that to ever happen, but that is the reality when too many toys come into the situation. So approach it with love, approach it from a monetary standpoint that you want to make sure that the toys that are coming in are then being played with and utilized, and that we aren't accidentally spending too much money on toys that we don't need to. And you can also come at it from a developmental standpoint saying my child is overwhelmed with toys right now and I feel overwhelmed for them. So can we make a plan heading into this birthday that we'll do just 3 toys, or will, you know, that you'll get this toy? Could I give you some suggestions of toys? And I think that's really okay to say to relatives who are showering kids with toys, generally speaking, want to be supportive. They want to help. And what they think is helping is showering the kid with toys. And it is going to be a shock when that isn't helping. But coming at it from a space of wanting to honor their money, honor their time, honor the toy that they're giving the child and making sure they're building a connection with that. And then remembering that, oh, that was from grandma. Oh, auntie gave you that. That was really special. And then also from a spot of, you know, we've simply run out of room in our house and I have to look at this a little differently, you know, and we're making some changes and then these are them. And you can feel fine giving out toy lists and making those Amazon wish lists and saying, you know, we would rather have, you know, a membership to the zoo, or we would love it if you could get the kids this one toy that they would all play with together, but it's a little more expensive than I want to spend, but maybe you could spend it as a combined gift would be so awesome. So it really comes down to being willing to have these conversations, which are going to be hard. And I've been there. I've literally had these conversations and we came out on the other side. We lived through it. We lived to tell about it, but it was really necessary because the amount of toys coming in was unbelievably overwhelming with 3 kids and 3 birthdays and 3 Easters and 3 Christmases and all these things. And so to really hone in relatives and get them on the same page. As hard as it was to have those conversations when my kids were baby and toddler, now that my kids are older, I have an almost 10-year-old, it has made life so much easier. And the toys get played with and the kids are excited when they open a toy from grandma because they know they're going to be playing with that toy. It's not just going to sit in a box or sit on a shelf unplayed with. They know that this toy is about to become a huge part of their life, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is so exciting. And these are really great suggestions. I know some people might be wondering like, okay, well, when it comes to purging, like, okay, clearly we want to get rid of like broken toys, you know, things like that. And, you know, not like developmentally appropriate anymore. But also sometimes when you have a toddler, you know, especially around that 2-year-old age, they're like in this me mind stage and, you know, they're looking at all of their possessions through this very this lens of the ego. And so parting with toys can feel
hard.
So do you have any ideas around that for parents and carers that might be like, well, I'm just a little bit scared to purge toys?
So I know this is going to really shock you that I have an analogy for this. I know that's not really something I give out a lot of. Again, it's going to go back to food. And I have to look at toys the way that I look at food in our house. As much as my kids would love cotton candy for breakfast, I know that that's not best for them. And I know that we have to make some different decisions around what's best for them. And I look at toys the same way. I am the gatekeeper of the toys. And I know what toys are going to support our development the best and what toys are done supporting that development. And it's time to move them on. I never, ever, ever recommend you get rid of a toy that was beloved. If there was a toy that was so beloved and it even hasn't played with for 6 months, that toy is still off limits. We need to have a chat with the child and we'll get to how to have that chat. But generally speaking, if I can see the broader picture, again, I'm looking at this all-knowing picture and I can say, this toy isn't working for us, I'm going to remove it. I don't necessarily always ask them to remove it. This is it. It's time. They haven't played with this toy in a year. They haven't played with this toy in 6 months, or this toy, it doesn't fit with the vibe of all the other toys in our house and it has to be done. To me, that's the same way as saying at a certain point, we're done with the Halloween candy bag. Like, we're done. We've hit our limit. And that can be the same way with toys. And it is okay to make those really tough decisions. If you're questioning a toy, hide it for a little bit, put it in your closet, put it in the garage, hide it from them, see if they come asking for it. And then that'll give you a pretty clear idea. If it is a beloved toy, then you may need to have a discussion with them. You may need to sit down and say, are we ready to part with this? Who could we gift this to? Sometimes it's easier if we gift a toy to someone more personal and we say, you know what, we're going to gift this to the neighbors. They're now in the stage where they want to use this. And then we can go visit that toy and we can see how used that toy is. And that becomes really easy for kids when they can really see that the toy is living on and they're part of that toy's life cycle. Is it needs to go. We loved it so much here. It deserves to be loved somewhere else. So we're going to gift it to this person and then we'll go and see how much they're loving it. And that's going to be so often. And sometimes I say to one of my kids is especially hard to get rid of them. And I say, you know, and then we will check in with them when they're done with it. And if we want it back, you know, we can of course have it back, which of course we've never done. But the option is always there for if we ever need to, we can always, you know, then bring the toy back. And that makes it a little bit softer. But it is hard to part with toys and it's hard for kids to part with toys, but it does become, you know, no different than parting with their clothes when they've outgrown it. You know, it is what it is. And we might save one or two favorite shirts that we want to keep for our grandparent nostalgic box. But we know that we can't keep everything in their clothing drawer because we're literally running out of space. And so, yes, this was a very beloved dress, but it is time. It's just, it is what it is. So as hard as it is and always wanting to honor that child and respect that child and their autonomy, there is again that other side of the glass, which is we are the gatekeepers. We see the long term. We can see the full scope of the picture. And we do need to just walk them through understanding what that full scope is and that sometimes toys are going to need to be rehomed. And that just is what it is.
Yeah. This is a lot of great ideas here. And just like knowing that, you know, it's okay if it feels a little bit challenging and a little bit hard. It doesn't mean that it's bad or wrong. And honestly, like these conversations that we might have with like other adults about the influx of toys or conversations might have with a kid about rotating or moving out a toy, you know, all of these things build resilience for us, build resilience for our child. And, you know, it's kind of like part of life. And sometimes it's okay for it to not feel easy, but it doesn't mean it's bad or wrong.
Exactly. No, you just said it so beautifully. Just because it feels hard doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do. It's just hard. And honestly, if you can start the foundation in the toddler years, then I can tell you 100% as a hindsight parent with kids who are in middle and later elementary school, that they're really good at donating and gifting their toys now. We went through the hard phase when they were 2 and 3 and maybe 4. And we've come out on the other side with kids that are really generous with understanding I've outgrown this. It's time. It's definitely time for it. We're not using this. I want to make sure this toy is used. I'd love to give this toy to this neighbor or this friend, or, you know, can we find one of the toy donation centers and make sure that this toy gets put into a great loving home? Yes. And that is what I can say has come out of this. And that's a beautiful thing, is what I can see what came out of these really hard conversations we had in the toddler and preschool years is these kids that are very understanding of donations and understanding about the life cycle of things in our house and the need to change over and the need to let things go so that we can bring in new, and the understanding that toys will support them and toys need to be played with, because what good is a tool if it's not being played with? We talk about that all the time in our house. What good is this tool if it's not being played with? So let's find the next owner. Let's find the next person that can use this tool. And how awesome is that? That we can be a part of that cycle.
Yeah. And we don't have to build this foundation overnight. I think it's like also remembering, like, it's a foundation that's being built. And so it takes time, and it happens in lots of little conversations and lots of little moments, and it doesn't just happen all at once.
No.
And that's how it's supposed to be.
it sure is how it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
We're coming to the end of our time together, and I'm just thinking, like, for parents and caregivers that are like, okay, this was really enlightening. I really shifted my mindset on how I look at toys and all of that. What might you say is one step that they can take today to get started, just to move the needle 1% in creating a change with toys?
I think the first thing that I would say to do is to put on that research hat and start figuring out what are the toys that make your child click, and what makes them excited about play, and when do you see them playing the most? This might happen at a library or at a children's museum. You might notice that these are the toys they're always gravitating towards when we go out in public, and they seem to play really well with them when we're at library story time, but then at home they don't play well alone. Well, maybe it's because whatever toys are at toys, you know, library story time are more of a building engineering, and all the toys you have at home are more movement or imaginary. And maybe we need to think a little more critically about what toys that child is really into. So that's one great step, is just putting on that hat and saying, I'm going to research into what my kid is interested in. I think the other thing I would do today is, I know you're inspired and you just want to do something, so just go grab that garbage bag and find some broken toys and toys that you know do not work anymore, that can't be donated, and just get rid and purge the ones that you absolutely know this is done. I can't even donate this. We're missing so many parts. Recycle it. Do what you need to do. Get that toy out of your house. Just get one grocery bag full of stuff will help begin to lighten the load so much, as opposed to just going in and saying, we're going to do the entire room right now. You'll regret that. Yeah. One bag at a time. One bag at a time. That's it. Start lightening the load one bag at a time.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. And do you have any other final thoughts or anything we might have missed that you want to share?
I just think it just all comes back to this idea. And I want you to just put it in your heart that toys are not stuff for kids. They're not just things for them to own. Toys are tools. And if we can stop thinking of toys as just cool things to buy for them, or something to make them quiet, or a way to show them we care about them, if we can shift away from that, because that has become the predominant mindset on toys. And if we can shift away and say, you know what, toys are more than that. These are the big tools that my child needs to do really heavy lifting, learning and developing. And I want to make sure that they have the right toys and the right tools for the kind of play and learning they need to do. And so that might mean limiting the number of toys that come into your house, or taking out some of the toys, decluttering, shifting away from toys that are maybe really trendy and of the moment, and instead looking at more of a lifelong toy, a toy that they're going to use for years, and really considering, how is this toy going to be used in our house? How will this fit into our home? As opposed to, again, I just want to buy this for them because it's cool and I think they'll like it right now.
Yeah.
Let's think a little more critically about toys. And then the last thing I didn't ever say is that when I'm talking about the right toys, that's right for your child. It's whatever is the right toy for your child. And the expense of a child of a toy, the price tag of a toy does not dictate how great that toy is going to be for the child. So when we talk about the right toy, that doesn't mean the most expensive toy. It just means the right toy for your child. And again, the price tag of a toy is never in a million years going to tell you whether or not a child will play with it. Price has nothing to do with it. So
thank you. Yeah.
Don't feel like you need those, all those like beautiful wooden, like these cost $500 and I got them imported from Europe. They're so gorgeous. No, it's whatever is the right toy for your child. That's the right toy for your family.
So helpful. Where can everyone go to learn more?
Oh, thank you for asking. You can find me on Instagram. I'm at Busy Toddler. And then my website is busytoddler.com.
Awesome. Oh, Susie, thank you so much for being here, for sharing all of your enthusiasm and passion and wisdom for toys and play. I just love chatting with you.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Always my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And to everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.